neoplastic paper this month that's suitable for us. So it's all going to be about lung cancer. And I realized that three of them were about immune environment or biomarkers for immunotherapy. And all of those use very advanced molecular technique, like RNA-seq with mining the data. And I just it blew my mind. I couldn't really follow their algorithm per se, but the concept may be still useful for us. So I will start with the first paper that is a by the Google Jack. This is from Mass General, I think. I'll share the Am I sharing the pictures? I mean, you don't need
Not
it.
yet. Not yet. Don't see anything.
Not
You may
yet.
have to hit the share button.
Yeah, share button. Sorry. I always lose my share button somehow. Zoom. Sorry, I'm not doing well even at the beginning. Return to meeting. Okay, share screen. Share.
Yeah, now it's starting.
I
Yep, now
see.
we see your desktop.
Desktop. Okay, so anyway, the purpose is, we all know that same stage tumor does not do the same. So they try to look at the molecular immunoprofile of the tumors that may modulate the survival outcome. So they looked at the immunologic and molecular contexture for insight of what drives the heterogeneous outcome. And they did a comprehensive analysis, more than 1,500 resected lung adenocarcinoma from three cohorts. The 1,500 may be a lot, but they use kind of a pooled data, one from TCGA, and there is another cohort that's from even broader one. So the only cohort that is really something real tissue related is from Mass General. So the cohort one is again TCGA transcriptomic data, and the second cohort is a pooled cohort downloaded from array expression analysis. So it's hard to know all the details of the technique, but it sounded like more crude form to the point they couldn't do some certain, more specific information. So that's the second cohort. Third cohort is 32 patients who underwent resection of a stage two tumors or stage two tumors at Mass General during about 17-year period with at least a 5-year follow-up. So the molecular analysis part, cohort three, that's the main one from Mass General. They did a whole exome and RNA-seq and transcriptomic analysis. And cohort one and two, they did RNA expression analysis. And this is about B cells. By the way, we all do T cells, but B cells are kind of a not really looked at for the most part. So they even want to look at the B cell subtypes, but the cohort two was kind of a more crude data, so they couldn't mine the subset, but they did for cohort three, the Mass General data, and cohort one, that is a TCGA. So for cohort three, they even did a histopathologic analysis, including lymphocytic infiltrates, histologic grade of the tumor, and the lymphoid aggregates, because that's, I suppose, that is more B cell characteristics. So they look at those aspects to compare with the molecular data. So the cohort one, they'll include a stage one to four. And to mine the data, they used RNA-seq deconvolution algorithm. And guess, you know, I couldn't understand a thing. And there was another paper that they cite. And I kind of saw this method a lot in other papers, not only in the other discussion paper, but in notation paper. So it must be now commonly used algorithm for mining the information from the molecular data. So they divided the data set into tertiles at first. They didn't show kind of a significant differences. So they did a different way. And that showed the data by dividing 10% absolute B cell amount. I just couldn't understand how they come up with it, but I just trust what they did. And they correspond to 66th percentile, so like a two-thirds. So when they did it, it kind of corresponded to it showed a difference in overall survival at least, but not in relapse-free survival. That's what it was in other people, but I am not even going to show the pictures. It was pretty clear. And then cohort two, that was the kind of more crude kind of data. So whatever, there's a meta cohort of 1,422 resected tumor, and they included stage one, two, three, but most of them were stage one. And the B cell expression exceeded the median. So they used a slightly different criteria for the B cell. So when they called the high B cell abundance, when they used that criteria, it also showed longer median survival for those who have a B cell, abundant B cells. So prognostic association was apparent in all stages, but only reached statistical differences in stage one. So because of probably larger number that contributed the statistical showing. And the cohort three is the one, the Mass General 32 patient cohort, to compare now stage two, because they want to see, because of the TCGA and this the cohort two, whatever the meta cohort, were mostly stage one. So they want to see other stage for the B cell function. But stage three, they didn't have enough the patients, so they decided to concentrate on stage two patients. And when they kind of exclude some patients for some reason, they ended up 29 patients with sufficient quality RNA-seq data. Most tumors were stage 2B, and for whatever reason, they had more KRAS and EGFR mutated patients. So there is a slight bias for this cohort as well. They kind of said that their limitation of a method, their study, because that has somehow has more of this mutation. So it's not really kind of a random, And the median follow-up was 4.9 years. And two groups on the basis of B cell infiltration per 10% threshold, as in the TCGA. And high B cell contents significantly associated with improved overall survival. And the trends toward the relapse-free survival as well. And high B cell content significantly associated with improved overall survival. And again, trend toward the relapse-free survival. But interestingly, no statistically significant association with the lymphoid aggregate on morphology or the density of immune infiltrate with their mined data from molecularized. So that's kind of interesting, You imagine that if you have a more B cell on their molecular data, then you will see more lymphoid aggregate in the tissue, but it didn't. And high B cell content was identified with or again, with or without lymphoid aggregate. And the PD-L1 expression by RNA-seq did not predict relapse or risk-free survival, but lower TMB by whole exome sequencing was associated with a longer survival. So, it's all by the molecular, so it's not by IHC. So, impact of distinct B cell subsets on survival outcomes were shown as shown in the my mouse is my biggest enemy. Let's just take the word. They showed that the B cell subsets showing that effect that I mentioned. Now, the B cell subset, they look at the naive B cells class switched. As you know, the B cell has a lot of a spectrum, but the naive B cells show some association with the relapse free survival or overall survival in cohort 3 and 1. Again, they couldn't do that analysis on the cohort 2, because of the crude nature of the data. And the B cell infiltration is enriched in tumor compared with adjacent lung tissue. This is what it shows. So the right one is the so when they look at the normal, the lower panel C and D, that's the normal tissue, and the A and B are upper part are the left is the TCGA data in the A, and the B is the M, the Mass General data. They show the similar thing. The blue is the B cell, so they have more than the normal cells. That was kind of interesting. So the B cells were more infiltrated in the tumor cells when they look at the tumor and the adjacent normal tissue. So their conclusion is the high tumor infiltrating B cell showed a favorable prognostic marker, and may need a more the B cell. We are just totally drawn to the T cell, but the B cell may have something, and potentially can be the target for the therapy. That's all for this paper.
Joanne, can I ask a question? So
Sure.
they predicted the profusion or prevalence of B cells based solely on RNA-seq data.
Yeah.
And is there, and I'm probably, well, I am naive. So there's evidence that you can do that? Like if you use more
Oh,
conventional measures
I know. So
of the
it is
prevalence
so
of B cells and established thresholds like 10%, do they
I know.
correlate?
So, that's what I'm saying. The whatever deconvolution algorithm thing, and I'm just that blow my mind. And in fact, I was kind of a little disappointed they didn't quote my paper that was on DIA. I looked at the B cell on tissue and actually plasma cells, and I also found a B cell infiltrate within the tumor had a better survival. Actually, you have to put this the other way. Lower B cell had a worse survival, whereas this one didn't show anything about the plasma cells on the subset analysis. But when you have a more plasma cells, that were worse. So I published a paper about 2 years ago by looking at the tissue, and they showed more B cell, okay, lower B cell showed worse survival, whereas higher plasma cells had worse survival. So it must be something, I mean, if that was true, it was, very limited, very kind of a small cohort, but very, very refined cohort. So, I kind of believe it, but I have to admit I couldn't understand their method exactly, But I'm telling you, this is coming, that it's not gonna go away. And so in a way, it's like it's not even fish or anything. It's like RNA-seq, And this method seems to be used so prevalently in these days in so many papers. So it must be something all working. I guess we have to be prepared. You know, we have to embrace this newer technique. And I was talking to even Anya that other papers for non-neoplastic thing is a really, really highly molecular thing. There was like poo-pooing the RNA stick was so crude, you know. They were saying single cell multi-omics, you know, like a multiple omics on a single cell. So that's like kind of over the top, but you know, RNA-seq these days was using for the PD-L1 in the next paper. I mean, the two papers later, they used the PD-L1 for with RNA-seq, you know, for their thing. So
yeah, it's just hard to know how to translate that information into real life.
I know, but that is kind of a trying to translate these days. So I guess we have to be prepared, brace ourselves for the kind of a near future. It doesn't sound like even, you know, remote future. It sounds like coming really, you know. I'll just go to the, you have to kind of go to the next one. Is this is about second paper is about the now tumor immune microenvironment. According to the programmed PD-L1 expression and immune cells. So this is kind of interesting in that, you know, we just do PD-L1 as a biomarker, but this paper is showing that what is more important thing, more important is both. So all that is PD-L1 by itself doesn't correlate well, but when you do the TIL, they use even different thing than just TIL, but both are by RNA-seq. So we are going to see another RNA-seq method for all these. So this is from China and use the Orient 11 trial. That seemed to be a very big trial, randomized double-blind phase 3 study from 47 centers in China. So they use the trial for this one. So using this one, they divided immune microenvironment to four subtypes. PD-L1 negative, TIL is not actually TIL, but it's more immune infiltrate by RNA-seq. You know, they use something called estimate. That's the abbreviation for something, you know. Anyway, they use RNA-seq data for TIL. So type one is both are low. And type two is both are high. And type three is a TIL is high, but PD-L1 is low. And the four, type four is PD-L1 is high, but TIL is low. So they try to look at the relationship between this time classification model and immunotherapy efficacy. So it's kind of interesting in that they, comparison is a combination. The basically both groups had the chemotherapy, but the combination therapy has immunotherapy plus chemo, and the group two is the placebo plus chemo, so didn't get the immunotherapy. So initial therapy plus like a maintenance therapy. So that's the group one and group two. They compare the effect of immunotherapy by these four groups of microenvironment that way. And so they randomized the 2-to-1 ratio combination versus chemo alone and looked at the progression-free survival as a primary endpoint, and then by RECIST, and then overall survival and objective response rate for the second endpoints. And they used a core biopsy for their the material, and gene expression level quantified using, I mean, they use the paraffin tissue, and the tumor immune infiltrate evaluated by again RNA-seq using R immuno-oncology. So it's all kind of statistical thing by 8 open source cell type quantification methodology. You know, trust me, I couldn't understand the thing, but there were 8 methods, but they end up using estimate, like a type of an estimate that stands for estimation of a stromal and immune cells in malignant tumors. That's their abbreviation. And they found that the correlated best. So they use that algorithm for assessing the tumor immune infiltration. And they also scored CD8 positive cell by RNA-seq, TILs, TIA, tumor immune infiltrating cells, calculate to identify the best predictive biomarker, all by RNA-seq. And then again, they did PD-L1 expression by IHC and RNA-seq. And the median score, so they use all those group to make these groups, you know, all the statistical model. And they look at median level of PD-L1 mRNA expression as a cutoff. So if it's the less than median, that's low. More than median is high. That's how they determined low versus high PD-L1. And IHC over PD-L1 was they went by 1, 5, 10, and 50% distinguished between high and low PD-L1 levels. So they just used all that, but ended up using estimate method that correlates whatever that worked better. So they didn't use IHC for their grouping. And they looked at the MHC, the histocompatibility class 2 for comparison, because they apparently did a prior study. So because it's in antigen presenting cells, they try to correlate with this class 2 expression and survival and statistical of analysis for, you know, routine way. And they have 113 patients with combination group and 56 of a chemo alone. And again, predictive model, they ended up using estimate because it worked best. And so they showed all the pictures. You know, pictures are so busy, you know, you have to pore over for half an hour to understand what they're saying. And they did all the other methods. Again, ended up using estimate. And predictive values of biomarkers reflecting PD-L1 expression. So again, they use the PD-L1 mRNA was more predictive than the TPS. So that's why I use the mRNA over IHC. And 50% cutoff points was if we use the IHS, the immunohistochemistry, 50% worked best. And the PD-L1 the mRNA expression and immune score calculated by estimate the highest predictive value again. So the four groups again, high, low, low, you know, that's the type one is low, low. Type two is the high. That was the one that responded, but not the just the PD-L1 positive one. There's group four, yeah. And the type one was 30.6, about 36%, and the type two high was about also 37, or slightly higher, and type three only the TIL but not PD-L1. There's a 13, about 14%, and PD-L1 high but TIL negative. There was about 14% as well. So you know we see those a lot. You know, very very high PD-L1, but hardly any immune cells there. So I always wondered, you know, how the PD-1 therapy works. You know, anti the PD-1 therapy works when there's no, you know, cells to, you know, fight or unfight against. You know, so this study kind of shows that aspect. So it showed only high, both PD-L1 and TIL by this the mRNA method worked for their cohort. The survival analysis only type 2 statistically significant associated with improved progression-free survival and overall survival when compared to when they compare combination versus chemo alone. So I guess they just kept saying, I guess that's true, you know, if you only see immuno alone, but they may not be the real world because the people usually get the chemotherapy also. So that their cohort again had chemo as a basic plus with or without immunotherapy. And there, the multivariate analysis also showed that type 2 worked. The MHC class 2 antigen presentation correlated with immune infiltration, but not with PD-L1 expression. So I guess that makes sense, you know, kind of if you think. And their conclusion was only type 2 that has both PD-L1 and immune infiltrate worked, showed a difference in the combination therapy. Any question? Quiet. I mean, I get the message is very simple, you know, right?
Yes, that we should stop doing IHC and let them do it all by RNA-seq.
That's right. You know, actually, I'm not kidding that it may be coming, you know, because if you think about ALK, we don't do ALK anymore, really, you know, because they are part of it, not even FISH, they do part of the molecular testing that takes care of it, you know. So we don't do the ALK immune anymore. They just go with the, you know, we don't hardly ever do the FISH anymore, do you? Or immuno?
We never did.
Yeah, so I guess that may be the future, you know.
What I find interesting is, I mean, it's probably, I mean, not probably two different methods, the RNA-seq and then the RNA-ish. But I remember when in the beginning, when PD-L1 came out, they tried to con they did IHC versus the RNA-ish, and RNA-ish was all over and didn't really correlate with anything, and so they abandoned the RNA-ish. But now we come to the RNA-seq, and then
That's
all of
right.
a sudden it's supposed to
So
work.
the probably the kind of a technique, you know, was much better than before or whatever, you know. So anyway, you know, the RNA-seq is the future, it seems like, you know, right now. And the third one is kind of interesting thing about small cell. And this is from Korea. And we all know that there are four groups, right? I mean, at least three groups. That is ASCL1 positive and NeuroD1 positive and PAL2F3 positive. And there is a YAP1, but it doesn't seem to be defined any group. So their group was ASCL1, NeuroD1, PAL2F3, and all negative, triple negative. Those are their four groups. And their study showed basically YAP1 in throughout all groups has a worse prognosis. That's what they showed. And for some reason, this study was a little easier to follow. So the most studies used the, you know, tissue microarray or cell lines, but they used the whole section. So in this study, they performed the whole section immunohistochemistry. This was based on immuno of these three antibodies, you know, ASCL1, NeuroD1, and the PAL2F3. Do we have a NeuroD1 at Mayo? I don't even know. We do have. But anyway, they used immunohistochemistry. And there were 98 stage 1A to 3B small cell lung carcinoma patient who underwent surgical resection for curative purpose, not the palliation, over 20-year period with at least a 3-year follow-up at from in a single institution. And 73 patients included because after excluding, you know, certain aspects, only only 78 meet the criteria. So they used that 78 patients, three patients. So histologic evaluation showed the combined patient was, I forget how much. So the significant minority was the combined small cell. So they included both the combined and the pure small cell and the molecular subtyping with IHC. So they also did a molecular I mean, with IHC, with all these antibodies. And they also did the RB1 and P53 immunostain to actually, they did on two cases for multiplex the study. So now another thing that technically coming is that multiplex, I didn't include it in here, but in the molecular, the neoplastic, the paper in the annotated, the notation. So that's another technique that is coming. You know, I guess some people used as a, for sure from the research, but some people do. You know, we do primitive thing like multiplex, like a light IHC, but even immunofluorescence that is starting to be used, you know. So they kind of did on that for the cases with multiple positivity. And the YAP one, they because they used the YAP one for poor prognosis, so they want to make sure that's not the entrapped cells. And apparently, YAP one can highlight some stromal cells or other non-neoplastic cells. So they did multiplex immunofluorescence to make sure YAP one and those all those other things, ASCL1, NeuroD1 and the POW2 F3 are overlapping each other. So they did the multiplex. So they use the H score and as you know, all those things. And they use the different criteria for negative, positive, and all that thing for YAP1 because probably YAP1 is generally lower expression. So they use a slightly different criteria for H score from other antibodies. In combined small cell, they only look at the small cell part, not the non-small cell part for their analysis, although they describe the non-small cell part, but the statistical analysis was only for small cell component. And they did a TTF1 and all that thing. RB1 loss was, I kind of saw this because the criteria was interesting. So RB1 is all tumor cells has to lose the RB1 to be called it RB1 loss, whereas the P53 either completely lost, that's the, like a mutation pattern, null type. But when it is positive, that's their criteria, so 50%, over 50% of a moderate to strong nuclear staining was the mutant pattern or equivocal. So they use the criteria for tumor showing both ASCL1. So another thing is some tumors showed both antibodies. So they use the higher H score for their type. So HCL1 and the NeuroD1 were overlapping. But they use the class for classification purpose, they use the higher H score for their classification, but the POW2F3 did not overlap. And again, the fourth type was triple negative. And to confirm the notion of the triple negative, I didn't know that notion, but apparently they have a higher inflamed phenotype. So they did MHC1 and the CD8 immunostains, and they showed that. And again, multiplex IF was for two cases that showed overlapping morphology and all that. And I mean, staining with these two antibodies. And they tried to see the YAP1 is staining only the tumor cells. They just did all that. And survival analysis, and they did external validation to independently evaluate the association of YAP1 expression with survival. So again, RNA-seq data from other paper, and they mine the data from there. So you have to probably learn how to mine the data from RNA-seq. I guess I'll be dead before I understand that thing, I suspect. But the younger, members have to know that, how to do those things. Mining the data. So 73 patients and all those days, let's just skip that. And the molecular subtype, The ASEL was the highest, 55%, and the NeuroD1 was the next. There's about 31%, and the POW2F3 was the lower, and they are actually same as the triple negative, so that's the lowest. And again, we are having fun with the POW2F3 because when we fail to show anything, and that sometimes show nicely positive stain. So I think a POW2F3, I mean POW2 antibody may be useful antibody to have, when you kind of prove it, although you can just go with H&E, So anyway, that's a lower number than A or N type. No survival difference among molecular subtypes or between pure and combined. However, YAP1 expression was it was low in all four types, but when it was low, that was worse. That was a point about this paper. And so the RB loss or 53, it was nothing to do with this the results, but it was kind of interesting. The loss was found in both the non-small cell and small cell component, except two cases. They showed RB loss only in the small cell element. And the significant enrichment of the N type in the combined. So when you have a combined morphology, the many of them are NeuroD1 express one and was associated with any type of non-small cell components. Triple negative was associated with higher, this MHC1 or CD8 phenotype. And compared to those A or N, but they say statistically not significant. It has a trend of it. So triple negative tend to be still have more immune cells in it. And distribution and morphology plasticity of YAP1, they said YAP1 was diffusely distributed, whereas the NeuroD1 and or other types are more kind of aggregated, not like a single cell scattered, whereas a YAP1 was a scattered, increased YAP1 level was in this more in the POW2F3 or triple negative type. There was a significantly more in those two types. In a subset, YAP1 expression highlighted clusters of tumor cells in the non-small cell morphology. So that's what they're saying, plasticity, morphologic plasticity. And YAP1 expression is reciprocal with ASCL1 and or NeuroD1 at the cellular level on multiplex IF. So they were what is yes or no, right? So not okay. So that doesn't make sense, right? The YAP1 positive cells do not express ASCL1 or NeuroD1. And the YAP1 expression tumor cells show co-expression of pan-keratin and diminished expression of neuroendocrine markers. That makes sense because the POW2F3 is a low in neuroendocrine subtype. So that went with this kind of at least a trend of it. YAP1 expression is an independent poor prognostic factor, also validated in external surgical cohorts. So they kind of made a point. So it's not a subtype delineator, but associated with poor prognostic factor. That's what they showed. Any question?
So did YAP1 then help in these triple negative cases? I know it's positive in other
Yeah,
cases too, but
I guess YAP1 is not specific for small cell. So, you cannot use it as your diagnostic marker, whereas POW2F3 is kind of a specific for small cell, So in a way, it's not going to be helpful for your diagnosis, but it may indicate a poor prognosis if you know that it's a small cell. That's my take,
I see.
YAP1 is not even specific for tumor, because it's present in the stromal cells or non-neoplastic epithelial cells, So does it make sense? Okay. So the last paper is another immune environment. It's kind of interesting in that This is another paper from Korea. The PD-L1 copy number alteration also is not by FISH. It is by RNA-seq and adjunct biomarker to respond to immunotherapy. Now, this is the marker for no treatment, I mean, no response. So this is very true. You know, the current companion diagnostic test is only for, you know, so first of all, it's not very, very correlating well, you know, the only moderately effective in predicting responders and but ineffective in predicting non-responders, right? And you know, there are this therapy is not without side effects, right? And it's very pricey treatment. So it will be very useful to predict who will not respond, right? So that was their point in this study. Two PD-L1 related biomarkers were evaluated in parallel. PD-L1 copy number loss by NGS and conventional PD-L1 IHC. So that's what they did. So they look at the copy number loss by RNA-seq. So PD-L1 copy number alteration was assessed by whole exome sequencing data. Yeah, I'm sorry, not RNA-seq, whole exome sequencing data, and compared with IHC, TPS over 50, 1 to 49, or 0, or you know, less than 1, prior to immunotherapy in 291 advanced non-small cell carcinomas over about 17 years, right? And the progression-free survival and overall survival were correlated with both biomarkers to compare which works better. Two independent cohorts using NGS panel were evaluated for the impact of alteration. So they had a two testing and validation cohort. TPS 50% or by IHC distinguished the best responsive group. So I guess that makes sense at least, you know. And the copy number loss based classification distinguish the worst responsive group. So their progression-free survival and overall survival both were significantly correlated with non-responder. And after adjusting for IHC results, copy number loss was an independent risk factor for progression, especially in this the between 1 to 49%. That's what they said. And a risk classification system on the basis of IHC and copy number profiles outperformed conventional IHC system. Yeah, the together worked better. And in validation cohorts, you mean you know, like a one like a the maybe like 2% positive, or they may do the you know, therapy, right? But those, if they have a copy number loss, they are not gonna respond. So that's kind of a, you know, the combination information. So in validation cohort, copy number loss by NGS was independently associated with worse progression-free survival after treatment. So it has a practical value. So their conclusion was a PD-L1 copy number loss alteration may complement the shortcomings of PD-L1 IHC in patients with advanced non-small cell carcinoma. On the basis of survival analysis, tumor PD-L1 copy number loss may be useful in predicting the lack of response. So they are trying to kind of single out the patient who should not be treated for immunotherapy, especially in those 1 to 49% group. So I thought, what can be useful, you know, because we do molecular test all the time. So there may be data to mine, you know. So I don't know how to do it, but if you can do it, that can be very useful, you know. So that was the last paper. So any question? Well, so we are on the top of the hour, but you know, quickly run through the notation papers. MHSI is, you know, the H is a kind of emphasized in other organs, but in this a small study, you know, conclusion was it's not that much footprint in the lung cancer. And the high yield of pleural cell-free survival, cell-free DNA was useful. That's in this study. So it's kind of useful, because the pleural fluid, you get that all the time. So it may be useful for your study. It doesn't go down, but other paper was the Anya made like this GTF21 mutation was useful for spindle cell morphology that was in type A and AB thymomas. And now it's like another microenvironment. So was the stroma is not for immune cells, but it's kind of interesting for the conceptually they were looking at the fibrillar protein profile by RNA-seq again, all the molecular data looking at the stromal quality that was helpful to predict worse survival. So that's kind of a metastasis. So we all know the stroma is doing something. So it was looking at very high in the molecular study. I can hardly follow kind of a molecular study for the stroma. So tumor environment, and they use a lot of high-end molecular and a statistical analysis that I couldn't even understood, And the ROS1 thing, and basically, I don't think the ROS1 immunohistochemistry is kind of useful at all. And the MET1 and PD-L1, the MET1, we're still forgetting, but there was something about the MET and PD-L1 combination therapy. And there was one study about IPF, and that one was using single cell analysis. It was a research paper, but it was kind of interesting. Fibroblast in the IPF, myofibroblast, they were looking at multi-omics from the single cell. They were looking at all the, I always wondered what is the difference in the myoepithelial cells in the IPF, like in the fibroblast foci versus in the, organizing pneumonia, why some resolves and one doesn't when one is scarred, So there maybe we may have a tool to look into those things, So kind of interesting paper. And there was a review paper at the whole thing was dedicated to mesothelioma in a the Amer Advances Anatomic Pathology or something. It was César Moran was the editor for that, the guest editor for that one. It was kind of interesting. They didn't quote WHO book at all. So it was like a separate universe for that. review papers. I listed all of them also. That's it for today.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thank
Yeah,
you,
thank
Jen.
you.